This week on the PhD Cast, we're talking about two of the biggest events in the calendar, the race that stops the nation. We talk Melbourne Cup, all the best brand activations, and also as tragedy struck, what the social backlash was, and also the billboard that wasn't, as a site came down prior to the event. Plus, it's Halloween. We talk about the dating site that tells you who to dress as to maximise your pulling potential, and all the best Halloween activations, including Dumb Ways to Die, which is back. This is the PhD Cast from PhD Australia. Hey, I'm Chris Stevenson, and joining me on the PhD Cast this week are regulars Christian.
Hello.
And Jess.
Hi.
And Angela.
Hello.
And joining us for the first time, a PhD Cast virgin and future regular, it's Emma Kate. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Welcome to the PhD Cast.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you on board. Lots happened this week. None was more front and centre than, of course, the race that stops a nation. It was the Melbourne Cup here in Australia, the biggest race in Australia, if not the world, and it certainly stopped us, and plenty of brands got in on the action. Let's talk about some of our favourites.
To be honest, what I really liked was the PayPal. I think that was quite cool that PayPal basically said that they know the real pain of the race day for women, which was about high heels, obviously, it's basically as a savior of women in high heels on race day. They partner with Uber, and whoever's actually paying through PayPal at Uber, they got $20 off of their rides. So I think that was quite interesting how they turned the brand into basically not only a promotion but a useful and convenient tool for people to get home, and especially women.
Awesome, man. And other favorites from Melbourne Cup and brand activations?
This wasn't exactly a favourite, but I think it's a good example of a brand planning social content well. So Holden tweeted, at Holden we know a thing or two about horsepower, have a great race day. And it's just simple, but it gets a point across, and it's reacting to something that's happening that day, and fans love that kind of thing.
But on that one, what I really liked about it is that there were some brands, I think, who really stayed true to what they're doing, and what I like, actually, the PwC one, just the fact that PwC made a whole lot of research of the history of Melbourne Cup and just analysed different races, different horses, horses coming from different nations, etc., and weight of the jockeys, and taking everything into account, they created a really cool infographics. And I think that was just a really interesting way into that's something that's contextually and culturally absolutely relevant, but also lends the point and puts PwC in a less like a formal and more culturally relevant, interesting light, but still actually stays true to the core of the business.
Yes, certainly that being culturally relevant angle for a business like that is hugely valuable, right?
Yeah, absolutely, especially when it comes to like global brands who are suffering to actually position themselves in the market as being relevant to that particular marketplace. I think it's really smart.
And we've spoken before on the PhD Cast about how these moments, whether they're holidays or whether they're events, are increasingly important for brands to cut through and to get social traction. Why are they becoming so important? Why do we see so many brands jumping onto events or holidays like this?
I think one of the main reasons why it's becoming so important for brands to show relevancy in real time is because that's obviously social media. It's a conversation happening in real time. And particularly with sentiment, you can see, if we use the Melbourne Cup for example, when a brand falls out of sync with reality, the sentiment often drops. There's often a drop in sentiment and brand positivity because people feel like they're talking about something that's not relevant to their lives. So that's where the real opportunity is, because obviously when brands do things that are actually in sync with big events and go to the chance of making a conversation that's relevant, they connect straight away with the consumer. And it's a really great tip also, because when things happen that aren't relevant and things happen, it can make a big difference to their positivity.
I think the example that would come spring to mind when you say that is the Oreo Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
totally leveraging a great big national event that everybody knows and loves. They couldn't have predicted what would happen that night, but they just jumped brilliantly into it and reacted in a superb way. And I think most brands now use that quite cliched example as being a great example of kind of that newsroom act reactionary.
Well, it was, you could argue. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I mean, it's an example of the double whammy. One, it's being there in real time, but then two, doing something smart with being there in real time. It's one thing to be there, and a lot of these are great examples of brands, whether it's Melbourne Cup or anything, who are there in real time
by virtue of their sponsorship
and doing that. But what Oreo did was that double whammy. Then they weren't only there; they were really smart and clever with something that happened whilst they were there.
And using insights, I guess. Because it's like a dinner party conversation. You know, if you rock up and speak in the same tone, no matter what people are saying, no one's going to sit next to you after entree. But if you're actually using the insights that you're getting, you change the direction of the content, then there's that real opportunity to connect.
I think it's a way for brands to show that they don't take themselves too seriously, but it's also a way for them to create associations with different communities. So with the Oreo example, in the lead up to Mardi Gras, they also released the
rainbow
color
Oreo. Yeah, basically
challenge.
The Oreo one was the Daily
days.
Twist campaign,
yeah,
so
yeah.
That it was an amazing campaign, and what they did and the reason why, and I think this is really important for brands as well to be able to do that kind of being real in being really active in real time and being like really really fun or really interesting, actually giving something exciting for the consumers. I think it's something that you just need also to prepare for. So you need to actually, even from time to time, like even like allocate budget to be able to react to what you need to be reacted for, but you can't actually expect. There would be some cultural relevant milestones, obviously, where you know that you're going to be like Mardi Gras or whatever it might be. Even you know that you're going to have a place in there and you can prepare for that. Some of these, like the Super Bowl one, obviously, you can't prepare ahead. But what's great in the whole campaign and what they could leverage in the Super Bowl one is that there was actually a team in the room that was real-time reacting for everything.
Yeah.
And that takes money, that takes preparation, that takes
and
commitment.
And a certain
amount
of bravery as well. I mean, I'm all for this newsroom model. I think that most brands should have a dedicated team who are there watching for what's going on in order to be react in the proper way. But I think for a lot of brands, and especially some of the smaller brands, that's quite a scary proposition. And I don't think quite, certainly in Australia, I wouldn't necessarily say that all brands are there yet.
The funny thing is, though, when you look at, if we use Melbourne Cup for an example, if you look at the controversy over the billboard with the horse, where it got, obviously there was a, quite a frightening image of a horse that had died and that being pulled, which could have seemed at the time like, oh my gosh, our advertisement not happening. But then on the reality was at Melbourne Cup in the middle of the fanfare, sentiment changed. Three horses died and all of a sudden in real time, the dynamic changed. So brands that are able to actually allow themselves to be prepared to connect with their audience and to move as reality moves actually, funnily enough, set better for actually being risk averse. To plan in advance and to have everything mapped out and then reality change is probably the scariest thing a small brand could really do. That's the funny thing. The news team really isn't about a newsroom as in old hacks sitting around kind of making controversial comments, but more giving you new ways to move within the real-time conversation. Yeah.
And it's having those people with a kind of an editorial and a journalistic bent. Not just some intern that you stick in to react and to put tweets or posts out. It's somebody who's really got that sense of the brand and got that sense of what people are talking about and has that editorial nous.
And the reader,
really,
I guess, the community, it's the insight. Like with Oreo and Daily, they would go on to rate or whatever tool they were using at the time. They didn't come up with the concept. It wasn't like a usual creative agency where they'd come up with the concept before. It was based on what was happening in that day, and then they used that to connect with the audience, and that's the difference.
And Emma Kate, you brought up the subject of the billboard that was actually taken down. So it was a billboard that was put up by a group of people who are protesting against racing, and it was on an media site, and because of complaints who brought the poster down. They removed the poster. Subsequently, that poster was then cleared by the Ad Standards Board. They said, actually, that poster was fine. There was no need for it to be taken down. The complaints didn't stand. It still came down. And then, of course, we saw the events of the Melbourne Cup. That conversation surfacing again. Who do we think is responsible for this? I mean, who is responsible for... Who should decide what we see? Should it be the media owner who owns the poster site? Should it be the public pressure? Should it be the Ad Standards Board? Should it be the advertiser in the first place? In a case like this, who should decide what we see?
I think had the horses not died, we'd be having a completely different conversation. And it just so happens that in hindsight, potentially that was the right thing for them to do because of what happened. But, you know, the bigger question is, you know, if the ad was cleared and it was deemed to be not necessarily appropriate, but okay to be viewed, then why was there such a big, you know, it's the whole freedom of speech argument, and who dictates what we can see, and should we be protecting each other?
Because in many ways, it's a reflection of what happens in the Twitter sphere, the smallest but most vocal voices, sometimes dictate the terms of the debate, which is exactly what happened here. A vocal minority brought a poster down when it was actually legally fine to be up there.
Now, I was just thinking that, to be honest, just looking at the article as well, and the reason why the Ad Standards Board said that it's absolutely fine, it said that it was not clear whether the horse is dead or alive, so the board ruled the image was not graphic and was not inappropriate to the context of the community. But it's really...
Dead.
It is actually there, and it was really hardly implied that it's dead. And I think, just from a perspective, I would have expected, for instance, the Ad Standards Board to actually rule it out and say I really would have. But I wouldn't actually blame, and I wouldn't make the owner of the site responsible for it.
I think it's in some ways indicative of social crises, because in some ways, when you think about it, it's about sentiment always, and a brand being able to pick at what point they make a conversation and whether people are ready to hear it. The reality is every year a horse dies and has died in the Melbourne Cup for, I think it's the last 6 years, but this year it was the favourite. So a big part of it was that it was the person that was meant to win. So at the point when they put this up, the truth is it was actually real-time content, but at the wrong time. Everyone was all about the parties and the dresses and everything about Melbourne Cup. And so when this billboard went up, it wasn't seen as actually connecting. It was seen as being disgruntled with where people were at. So it's an interesting show of how it's all about timing.
All about
and it's a social crisis. Often it's because people say the wrong thing at the wrong time, and that's how these things seed out. Now you'd be almost showing what integrity and who thought of the thought leader to get that banner off.
And so from that and that conversation to another big event of the week, which is Halloween. Let's start off with Plenty of Fish, a dating website, who surveyed 1,200 heterosexual single men and women between the ages of 21. That'll become important. 1,200 heterosexual single men and women between 21 and 40 to find out what they were going to dress up as Halloween, which characters they were most likely to hit on. To help members of the opposite sex guide what they may dress up as. Now, as utility goes, this is right up there. Katie, tell us all about it.
I really do think, and this is actually why I really liked also the PwC example previously as well, that there's so much rigor and analysis and data actually behind it, and it's really true to the dating site as well, because they also researched that actually around 38% of men and around 32% of women are open to have a first date on Halloween. So they basically, that could have been the insight that kicked this whole thing off. And what they did then, they surveyed all these men and women around what they are more likely or most likely to actually dress up, and then drawn the conclusion who would be, whether actually Captain America would be hooking up with Katniss from Hunger Games. And I think it was just, again, a really smart and interesting and really different way in for Halloween.
And it also brought to light the staggering contradiction at the heart of heterosexual men, which is that...
So surprising.
I know, right? I know who saw it coming. Because men overwhelmingly said they preferred sweet, submissive female yes. costumes, two strong apples,
strong apples.
And yet they were going to hit on Katniss Everdeen, Katy Perry, and the Mother of Dragons, none of whom can be described as sweet or submissive, right? Yeah. What's going on with straight men, guys?
if we knew that, we'd be in a much different position to...
what's more worrying, Sleeping Beauty?
Yeah, where did that
come from? Well, she probably has a heaving bosom. Therefore, see, Halloween's a really interesting time because sometimes you see people who would normally be quite quiet and quite unassuming in their Halloween costumes, and without fault, they have their heaving bosoms, they have their tight nipped in waist.
Sponsored by Rihanna.
They use it as an excuse to dress like hookers sometimes.
But asleep.
You brought up the date rate.
I mentioned the date rate.
It's an interesting time.
This is an amazing activation by a platform and a brand around Halloween, right?
Absolutely, and I think it's just also something that goes beyond the regular, there is Halloween, we are a brand, let's make something funny out of it, because we have assets. And for instance, some of the other brand activations around Halloween, I was quite disappointed with, to be perfectly honest. Like, I don't know, guys, if you have seen the IKEA one. IKEA created a Halloween video.
Just
as
the Shining.
The kid is driving through IKEA, and it's like all scary and like really frightening. And at the end, you basically realize that the kid is just daydreaming, and he's there with the parents. But it was just, I saw that one, and it was like, I was like, oh my god, I actually don't want my kids to be in IKEA. Like, it was pretty scary. It was really interesting. I wouldn't have expected IKEA. I would have expected IKEA to come up with something really smart and funny. I just didn't expect that the sentiment around it would have been like that.
They kind of branched off to become publishers in their own right. Like, when you think about it, like Ask Men does their top 99, or when I was editing it, we'd always do the annual male survey, and have these great stereotypes. And the truth is, people love stereotypes because it connects with the average, like, daily thing that we're all interested in, like Sleeping Beauty and Captain America dating. But I think this one shows, like, they could actually syndicate this content. It will be talked about for a long time. It sort of really went beyond advertising into kind of an entire kind of publishing mentality, which was really great for that brand.
A national debate as to who's hotter.
Yeah, but
I expected on Q&A on Tuesday Insight.
We talked about the Attorney General, no doubt, was discussing it. What's interesting is it's an example of what we talked about a couple of weeks ago, which is these new contracts that are emerging between brands and consumers, which is there's a degree of we'll give you value, we'll give you stuff, and we'll give you utility in response to you engaging with us.
Reciprocity
is how it was termed, yeah.
Exactly, and I think for just an activation being true to the nature of the dating side as well, I think it just has so much possibility to get some social traction to actually, like, even drive further the just the registrations to the website, and just generally drive faith to the site as well. I think it was really, really awesome.
It's great when something like this works. I've heard a radio ad for a furniture company that will remain nameless. But we're like, ooh, buy our spooky sofa. And it's like, it has no actual relation back to Halloween. Mm. They're just trying to bank on the
piggyback on.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, and it doesn't work.
Generic call-out is probably the worst thing about it, because it almost seems like it's been scheduled since last year in Hootsuite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but this is what I was thinking about, and actually when I saw the new Dumb Base to Die. So Dumb Base to Die is back, right? And they have the whole theme around the new ways of Dumb Base to Die is around like training. So how Dumb Base to Die in the gym, basically. and strangely enough, although this whole theme and whole concept is really far away in the distance from Halloween, they actually used Halloween as the date when they launched the new Dumb Ways to Die video that had absolutely nothing to do with the brand's proposition for this year around training or anything like that. It was more about to do with Halloween and trick or treating, and it was funny, but I felt like it was quite I couldn't decide whether it's actually good or bad because they leveraged a cultural moment in time, which actually created a lot of traction for them, but it was not true to the nature of the event that it's going to be coming up.
Yeah, it's all about the angle.
And that's about all we've got time for on the PhD cast this week. A big thank you to Katie.
Thank you.
And Emma Kate. And Jess.
Bye.
And Angela. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week in some way, shape, or form. Thanks for listening. Why are they becoming so important? Why do we see so many brands jumping onto events or holidays like this?
I think the one that just makes me, I mean, when I think of jumping social currency and jumping on events is the obvious example of social obvious example of I've just come back from a meeting and done no reading and I shouldn't be here. Stop that. Oh my god.